diplomat in charge of BRICS relations, Anil Sukhlal. South Africa, being the current chair of the BRICS group, will be hosting the summit in Johannesburg on August 22nd to 24th. Sukhlal explained that the BRICS nations, including Brazil, Russia, India, China and South Africa, will discuss using national currencies and reducing reliance on the US dollar. He was quoted by Reuters as saying, "There has never been talk of a BRICS currency. It's not on the agenda. What we have said and we continue to deepen is trading in local currencies and settlement in local currencies." Recently, Russian news outlet RT claimed that the BRICS nations will announce a gold-backed common currency at the August summit. However, Leslie Mastrop, vice president and chief financial officer of the New Development Bank, also known as the BRICS Bank, stated that the economic bloc has no immediate plan to launch a currency to compete with the US dollar. Noting that the distinction between de-dollarization efforts and the creation of a common BRICS currency, he stressed, "The development of anything alternative is indeed a medium to long-term ambition." Brazil's President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov have championed the concept of a common currency as the BRICS nations endeavor to counter Western dominance in global finance, Bitcoin.com reported. This followed heavy financial sanctions the West placed on Russia after the outbreak of crisis in Ukraine. The US and its allies have frozen about $300 billion in Russian central bank assets, promoting many countries to seek alternatives to the US dollar. According to RT, IMF has recently warned that the share of dollar in global reserves has been lowest in 28 years. Experts say the freezing of Russia's forex holdings has accelerated de-dollarization around the world. The process of diversifying away from the greenback by countries around the world is gathering pace, according to the latest data from the International Monetary Fund. The statistics tracked by the Washington-based institution show that the dollar's share of official gold and foreign currency reserves dropped to a nearly three-decade low of 58% in the first quarter of 2022. The move has reportedly been gradual, and the dollar share of central banks' foreign reserves is now nearly down to a level last seen in 1995. The long-standing status of the dollar as the world's dominant currency has been steadily eroded in recent years amid concerns over soaring U.S. debt and widely implemented sanctions using the currency as leverage. The shift was more pronounced when adjusted for exchange rates, according to Stephen Jen, CEO of Eurozone SLJ Capital Limited, as quoted by Reuters. He said what happened in 2022 was a very sharp plummeting in the dollar share in real terms, calling the decline a reaction to the freezing of half of Russia's $640 billion in gold and FX reserves. According to Jen, the drastic step sparked a rethink in countries like Saudi Arabia, China, India, and Turkey about diversifying their reserves to other currencies. The yuan's share of global over-the-counter forex transactions has increased from nearly zero 15 years ago to 7%, according to the Bank for International Settlement, BIS. After the move against Russia, other currencies are questioning, what if you fall on the wrong side of sanctions? BNY Mellon strategist Jeffrey Yu told the media. He said, global central banks are currently seeking to diversify their assets, scooping up corporate debt, tangible assets such as real estate and other currencies. Mark Tinker, managing director of Taka Fund Hong Kong, told the agency, this is the process that is underway. The dollar is going to be used less in the global system. temperature.
Welcome back to Aperture. In the first part of the program, we followed Javad, an Iranian nature explorer and documentary filmmaker, to the south of Iran and saw the most amazing combination nature could match together, the desert and the sea. We also met the region's native inhabitants and got acquainted with their unique lifestyle. Stay with us as Javad travels to other villages of the region to discover the culture and customs of the people.
In the past, the staple grains for all of Iran came from Sistan and Balochistan. But what for severe drought spells and misguided planning over the years, the province has completely lost that status. But today, in some areas of this province, and in the Bahu Kalat district in particular, all kinds of vegetables and tropical fruits are cultivated. There is a mango tree that's in full bloom, exploding with blossoms. In about 5 months, they will turn into delicious, juicy mangoes. This is heaven indeed. Walking around in the palm groves and other gardens in Bahu Kalat gives me a lot of peace. One of the most beautiful things I come across during my stroll is the Baluchi squirrel. The Baluchi squirrel, also known as the stripy or palm squirrel, is a unique species of rodents living in parts of Iran, Pakistan, India, Nepal, and Bangladesh. The most distinctive feature of this mammal is the dark stripes on a white background on its back. In the past, the inhabitants of Sistan and Balochistan believed these stripes were the fingerprints of the gods. A typical Baluchi squirrel is between 13 and 15 centimeters from its head to the end of its rump, and its tail adds an additional 14 to 19 centimeters to its total length. It's quite refreshing to see Baluchi children playing and gallivanting around in the banana groves. Beautiful, pure souls, the product of their serene, peaceful surroundings. Children of Shir Gwaz spend the whole week waiting to go to the fruit groves near the village to expend some of their inexhaustible energy. What they also do is they cook their traditional food on their own, and just like their elders, they gather around, sing, and play. The kids here have distinctive, innocent faces. They are just gorgeous. And they're all wearing their traditional costumes, boys and girls alike. All wearing traditional clothes. They are among the oldest, most original tribes in Iran. They're very noble and very patient. They are a people with a lot of patience. And although some of them don't have good living conditions, they are very patient folks. They're so content. The Baluchi culture is the perfect example of a culture of nobility and peace. And those cultural traits are readily visible in the architecture of the old houses in this village. The architectural design is endemic to Balochistan. You can't see anything like this anywhere else in Iran. There are also new houses in these areas with designs influenced by Indian and Pakistani cultures and architectures. One of the characteristics of Baluch families is their large populations. Wherever in the village I go, I'm surrounded by many of the little angels offering a breath of fresh air after a long day of hard work. They fill my heart with peace and joy. Perhaps one of the reasons these kids are so happy is their beautiful, tranquil, natural environments. Just as influential is the beautiful, happy colors used in the clothes that these little girls have on. Clothes that are embroidered by the artistic hands of their mothers. Hand embroidery on colorful clothes and fabric is among the most important crafts of Baluchi women. And fortunately, Baluchi women have been able to preserve this exquisite art, a skill handed down through generations. It's noontime. It can get really hot in Shirguaz, even in the middle of winter. But the boys of the village have a good solution to fighting the scorching heat. What they do at a time like this is jump into the waters of Shirguaz River and swim to their heart's content. These children usually play together in groups. The day offers an opportunity for me to make a return to the beautiful carefree days of my own childhood. Live life as an uninhibited, unabashed explorer of the unknown. Playing with these children serves as an outlet for the negative energy in me. Although the children in Shirguaz don't have much to entertain themselves with, they are all growing up happy, healthy, and strong by playing in groups and making the best of what their natural environment provides them with. No computers to spend the whole day on, playing virtual computer games that don't involve any physical activity, video games that have taken the place of playing outside for many kids today, outdoor experiences in nature, and plenty of physical activity that a growing body craves. These children's only toy is nature, going up trees, diving into the river and swimming, playing with animals, singing songs and helping their parents at home and on the farm, frolicking around and playing with stones and pebbles. This non-stop joyful mobility is the reason behind these children's physical health and happy disposition. Very soon, I leave the village and set out for my next destination. I have to travel 250 kilometers to the west of Baluchistan, to a place 80 kilometers north of the city of Nikshar, a name that reminds me of my country's beautiful north. Given its unique geographical location, Baluchistan has a diverse and strange climate. Some parts of this area is affected by the tropical climate of India, in the south by the Sea of Oman, in the west by the Jasmuriyan inland basin, and in the north by Lut Desert. Surrounded by these different climatic conditions, Baluchistan features diverse lifestyles and various plant and animal species. Baluchistan is a dry, water-thirsty land. The average annual rainfall in the province is around 110 millimeters. But the important thing is, all that water comes down in only a couple of torrential rainfalls that cause the rivers in the province to overflow their banks. The ensuing flooding leaves behind a trail of destruction every time. The people here tell me they get snow and blizzards in some winters too, because of the mountains in the Gorgan area. Perhaps you'll find it interesting to know there is a place named Gorgan in Sistan and Balochistan province. But no, it has nothing whatsoever to do with the city of Gorgan in the north of Iran. This area is comprised of around 11 villages punctuating this mountainous area. It can get freezing cold here. The people of Balochistan say, except for Mount Taftan and Mount Basman, the only other place where you can see snow in the highlands is the same Gorgan region in Balochistan. It can get really cold here. Because of the altitude and the relatively good rainfall here, this valley usually has a good amount of water. And abundant water means life and prosperity. The people of Gorgan are either farmers or orchard owners or livestock keepers. The most important thing for them to be able to do any of those things is to have clean drinking water. The people of the first village I visit are very kind and hospitable. In my conversations with them, I realize all the young people in the village are busy working simply because there is enough water. Everyone has something to do. They're all grateful to God for all their blessings. Their biggest asset is contentment. I could say most of the things I've seen in this village were built from scratch by the men and women living here. They are all content with what they have. They even have electricity. They live a beautiful, simple, and healthy life, away from the hustle and bustle of city life and excesses that distract human beings from their true self and from nature. The Baluch community leads a simple lifestyle in their simple homes in Balochistan. They don't even expect a paved road. The peace that these lovely people exude is a breath of fresh air against the vicissitudes of city life. I am so at peace when I am in their fold. Before long, I resume my journey and arrive in the village of Archenik, a bucolic settlement second to none. But it isn't the architecture and natural environment that lends Archenik its beauty. The most beautiful thing I come across is the hospitality of the local inhabitants. Archenikis are hard-working, hospitable people. Moments after I reach the village, one of the elders comes to welcome me and invite me to his beautiful house. And the family gives me the red carpet treatment. Personally, I have a lot of respect for the culture and customs of this lovely ancient tribe and have tried my best not to have a negative impact on the culture or any of the good social norms of this community. Instead, I learned from them things that I had no idea about before I met them. I have had many trips to far and exotic places in Iran. And on those trips, I saw many and varied village houses and nomad tents. But nothing like the teepees in the Gorgan region. Beautiful, modest homes that offer peace and tranquility, just like their natural surroundings. Village elder, Pir Muhammad, fills me in on how they build their houses. My trip is nearing its end. That means I have to leave the beautiful Sistan and Balochistan province and head back home. I leave with a bag of experience and memories as sweet as the dates of Gorgan. And I do so knowing that I haven't done any harm to the natural environment and the culture of this ancient tribe.
Well, I'm quite sure that this week's documentary about Iran's natural wonders intrigued all our audience across the globe. And I hope it inspires you to come and explore the hidden treasures of Iran. And that's it for this week. Do keep in touch with us. And until next week, goodbye.
Thank you. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه.
السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters, dear Muslim brothers and sisters actually. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quranic Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. Here we are again, alhamdulillah, with Brother Ali Nasir, Hussein, Hassan, and Fawad Haider. I really welcome you all. Assalamu alaikum jami'a. How are you? Fine. Everybody's fine?
Yes.
Great. Inshallah, today we will talk about an important topic, about the mercy of Allah Almighty, about the bounteous mercy of Allah Almighty, about the unlimited mercy of Allah Almighty that takes over every single creature, okay? That, yeah. So, ayah 145 and 146 of Surah An-Nisa. Hassan, Hussein, Ali, Nasir, Fawad, ready? Before we go to the explanation, we will listen to the recitation once.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Innal munafiqina fid darkil asfal minan nar wa lan tajid lahum naseera illa alladhina tabu wa aslahu wa i'tasamu billahi wa akhlasu dinahum وأخلصوا دينهم لله فأولئك مع المؤمنين وسوف يؤتي الله المؤمنين أجرا عظيما.
Nice one. Brothers and sisters, inshallah, hope you stay with us till the end of this session. We have talked about the hypocrites, okay, in the previous sessions. And we said that, of course, they are a severe punishment, okay, they have. Here Allah Almighty says an important point. Look, the first ayah for today, Allah Almighty says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, ayah 145. Innal munafiqina fi darkil asfali minan nar. Indeed, the hypocrites will be in the lowest reach of the fire, in the deepest level of the fire. وَلَن تَجِدَ لَهُمْ نَصِيرًا. And you will never find any helper for them. This is the kind of, we can say, the last point of punishment. Okay? The severe punishment. But what does Allah Almighty mention here? Allah Almighty mentions an important point. As in the other verses of the Quran, Allah Almighty says, وَرَحْمَتِي وَسِعَتْ كُلَّ شَيْءٍ. My rahmah, my mercy, takes over every single creature. Kulla shay, okay? It means I'm merciful. At the same time that I am punishing, I'm merciful as well. But to whom I am punishing, and to whom I am merciful. See, even if these hypocrites who will be sent down deep in the hellfire, okay, they also have a chance to what? To experience the mercy of Allah Almighty. But what kind of hypocrites? Which one of them? Which ones of them? Allah Almighty says in the next ayah, إِلَّا الَّذِينَ تَابُوا. Except those hypocrites who tabu what? Who repent, وَأَصْلَحُوا, and reform and become better people. وَعَتَصَمُوا بِاللَّهِ, and hold fast to Allah Almighty. وَأَخْلَصُوا دِينَهُمْ لِلَّهِ, and dedicate their religion exclusively to Allah Almighty. فَأُولَٰئِكَ مَعَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ. So these people will be no longer hypocrites. They will be with the faithful people. وَسَوْفَ يُؤْتِ اللَّهُ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ. When they become with mu'minin, they turn to be believers. And soon Allah will give the faithful people أَجْرًا عَظِيمًا, a great reward. Then they will be no longer in the hellfire. They will be granted
mercy.
Mercy and?
So from hellfire.
They can be taken. No, from hellfire, no. Look, it says this. Yeah, of course, even if they go to hellfire in the day of judgment, after they get their punishment, okay, they'll go to what? Because we have different types of people. Some people, okay, will have severe punishment and eternal punishment. خَالِدِينَ فِيهَا, Allah Almighty says. خَالِد. It means they will be punished. There is an explanation here that...
So for some people, it's infinite.
Yeah.
Some special
people. Yeah, but scholars as well have discussions here. But for some people, yeah, when they get punished, okay, they will go to heaven. And also in Barzakh also, okay, some people will be punished in Barzakh as well, okay, and their punishment will be finished, ended, okay, their sins will be forgiven in the Barzakh, okay? Look, Allah Almighty tells about His mercy, that my mercy even includes those people who deserve to go deep in the hellfire. The lowest part. The lowest part of Jahannam or hellfire is the what? The most fiery one. You can say it. It's a severe punishment. Even Rahmah, mercy of Allah Almighty, takes, if mercy or Rahmah of Allah Almighty takes over someone, okay? And that person has to have some qualities. What kind of qualities? He has to repent, really repent. He shouldn't be like hypocrite anymore. Okay? Not for secular advantages. He once believes in the morning, in the afternoon he disbelieves. Okay? وَأَصْلَحُ, then start doing good things. Not plotting against Muslims, plotting against his Muslim brothers, sisters, against his family, or trying to deceive Allah Almighty or something like that. وَعَتَصَمُوا بِاللَّهِ, and seek help from Allah Almighty, hold fast to Allah Almighty. And also وَأَخْلَصُوا دِينَهُمْ لِلَّهِ, and their religion, whatever they do, must be solely for Allah Almighty. So if they have these qualities, yeah, they can be forgiven. Allah Almighty will send them to the heaven. Alright, that's it. Any questions, guys?
No, sir.
Hope, inshallah, we've learned something from this. I really ask you to refer to the tafsir books because we mention short tafsir points.
هذا القرآن يوحدنا لطريق الخير يوجهنا الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا رسول الله معلمنا.
Want to learn Quran at home? Join us in our Quranic class. Let's recite the Quran.
Let's move on to the second part of our class, the Tajweed rules. If you are ready, and let's wake up those people who have fallen asleep with a loud salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa jinfar.
Knock, knock, knock. We're going to go to the Tajweed rules. Get up. Inna al-munafiqina. Again, nun mushaddad. Of course, wherever you find it, pronounce it with a longer sound. Inna and a nasal sound. Munafiqina fi ad-dark. Fi ad-dark. Fi ad-dark. Ra has a heavy sound. Fi ad-dark al-asfal. This expression is used a lot, okay? People use this.
Yes.
Also, these asfal as-safilin as well, they use a lot, okay? It means the lowest part.
Can you translate?
Huh? The lowest part. Dark is that level. Asfal means lowest. Fi dark, okay? Not fi ad-dark, no. Fi dark. Fi dark al-asfali minan nari. Again, nun mushaddad. Minan nari. لا تجد نون ساكن بلس تاء إخفاء هايد السون ولا تجد لهم نصيرا را هذا هي في سان إلا الذين تابوا وأصلحوا واعتصموا ignore همزة الوصل here واعتصموا بالله again همزة الوصل is skipped here also the word Allah is pronounced with an a sound بالله وَأَخْلَصُوا دِينَهُمْ أَخْلَصُوا خَا has
a heavy sound.
أَخْلَصُوا دِينَهُمْ لِلَّهِ فَأُولَئِكَ مَعَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ فَأُولَئِكَ the mad is wajib here مَعَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ Hassan, you tell us what does Sila mean here?
Better to continue.
Better to continue. Salah wasl. Yeah, better to continue. You could still stop here. It's okay. No problem. Wasawfa yu'ti Allahu. Again, the word Allah is pronounced with a light sound. Since there is a... A kasra before the word Allah. Whenever you got a kasra before the word Allah, okay, pronounce the word Allah with an a sound. But whatever... Allah is preceded with a fatha or a dhamma. Pronounce it with an a sound. وَسَوْفَ يُؤْتِ اللَّهُ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ أَجْرًا عَظِيمًا أَجْرًا Jim is sakin. It should be pronounced with an echoing sound. Yes? أَجْرًا Yeah. Ran, tanween. After tanween you have عَيْن. No changes. أَجْرًا عَظِيمًا Azeeman changes to
Azeema.
So, we have mentioned the Tajweed rules. Let's now practice the recitation. Ready, guys?
Yes.
Yes.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
إن المنافقين في الدرك الأسفل من النار ولن تجد لهم نصيرا
إن المنافقين في الدرك الأسفل من النار ولن تجد لهم نصيرا
إلا الذين تابوا وأصلحوا واعتصموا بالله وأخلصوا دينهم لله فأولئك مع المؤمنين
إلا الذين تابوا وأصلحوا واعتصموا بالله وأخلصوا دينهم لله فأولئك مع المؤمنين
وسوف يؤتي الله المؤمنين أجرا عظيما
وسوف يؤتي الله المؤمنين أجرا عظيما
صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم
Allah bless you, inshallah. See you in the next session with the next verses of Surah and Nisa. Stay with IRB English Radio, brothers and sisters. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Russia has warned that the West's approval of Ukraine's attacks on Crimea could set the stage for a disastrous war between Moscow and Kiev's Western allies. The warning has been issued by the deputy chairman of Russian Security Council, Dmitry Medvedev. The former Russian president has warned any green light to Ukraine's attacks on Crimea entitles Moscow to take action against, quote, each and every NATO member. He added that such an approval would be considered direct legal evidence of the West's complicity in the war against Russia. Medvedev's comments came after a senior Ukrainian official said Washington supports strikes on Crimea if Kiev deems them necessary. Mikhail Podolyak, senior advisor to Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky, has also said there is absolute consensus amongst Western countries that Kiev can destroy anything that belongs to Russia in territories taken by Moscow. Medvedev has repeatedly warned Kiev that Moscow would have to use a nuclear weapon if Ukrainian forces set foot on Russian territory. Medvedev has said if the West truly supports what Mikhail Podolyak says, it would signal an apocalyptic risk of the end of the world. Moscow has said that the collective West is waging a proxy war against the Russian nation, with the Ukrainian troops under Kiev's command merely providing the cannon fodder for the conflict.
Here you have one country which has 100 million more people than the other country and has much deeper military industrial capacity, can make more missiles, make more bullets, make more tanks than the other country. So over time, the bigger country is almost certain to win, correct? This is a physics principle. Right. It's not a statement of allegiance. You're not a shill for somebody for acknowledging that. If we're wrestling and you outweigh me by 100 pounds, you're probably going to win because you're bigger. That's a fact.
Meanwhile, the Biden administration is working to reach a deal with Ukraine for long-term military support to keep backing the war with Russia. According to media reports, the commitments would make it difficult for a future president to exit. The effort is part of a commitment made by G7 nations at the recent NATO summit in Vilnius to negotiate their own bilateral security deals with Ukraine. Besides the G7 nations, 18 other countries have agreed to provide long-term military support for Kiev.
The United States, NATO, and the EU are on the wrong path. And at the very most, it could lead to their destruction. And at the very least, it will destroy the euro It will destroy the dollar. It will destroy the Western economy.
Reports say Western officials are looking for ways to lock in pledges of support and limit future governments' abilities to backtrack, amid fears in European capitals that Donald Trump, if he recaptures the White House, will seek to scale back the aid. The United States has announced $250 million in fresh military aid to Ukraine. The package is said to include equipment for clearing mines and obstacles, as well as missiles, artillery rounds, anti-armor missiles, and more than 3 million rounds of small arms ammunition. Kiev has already received more than $43 billion US dollars from the US in the form of weapon systems like howitzers and millions of rounds of ammunition, including widely banned cluster munitions since last February when Russia started a special military operation in Ukraine. The flow of arms to Ukraine has raised concerns in some European capitals. Former Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte has said NATO's strategy regarding the conflict in Ukraine has not led to the outcome desired by the alliance, and the economic sanctions imposed on Russia have not crippled its economy. According to Conte, the strategy pursued so far in NATO, based on constant military supplies to Ukraine and the logic of escalation, did not lead to a military defeat for Russia. The US and its allies have pledged to give Ukraine F-16 fighter jets, but military experts now believe jets are not going to be a silver bullet for Kiev.
A group of rebellious military officers declared a coup in the Central African nation of Gabon, minutes after the results of the presidential election showed that President Ali Bongo had won a third term. Gabonese junta pushers declared their intention on television on Wednesday, saying that they have overthrown the government of President Ali Bongo. Spokesman for the group denounced the, quote, irresponsible, unpredictable governance of President Ali Bongo, claiming his 14 years in office had resulted in a deterioration in social cohesion that risked leading the country into chaos. President Bongo first took office in 2009, after the death of his father, Omar Bongo, who had become president in 1967.
On this day, August 30th, 2023, we, Defense and Security Forces, meeting within the Committee for the Transition and Restoration of Institutions, on behalf of the Gabonese people and guarantor of the protection of institutions, have decided to defend peace by putting an end to the current regime. The general elections of August 26, as well as the truncated results, are cancelled. The borders are closed until further notice. All institutions of Republic are dissolved.
The latest elections were overshadowed by a lack of international observers, raising concerns about transparency. After the elections, the government curtailed internet service and imposed a nightly curfew across the nation, saying that it was necessary to prevent the spread of misinformation.
The election was perceived as not very transparent. There were no observers, as far as one can tell, international observers or regional, major regional observation mission or anything like that. And the election results were announced in the middle of the night at just around dawn or 3-4 o'clock in the morning.
Gabon is one of the richest countries in Africa in terms of GDP per capita, thanks largely to oil revenues and a small population of 2.3 million, but a third of the population still lives below the poverty line of $5.50 per day. The Central African nation of Gabon shares borders with Cameroon, the Republic of Congo, and Equatorial Guinea. It was a colony of France before gaining independence in 1960. Following the coup, crowds took to the streets of the capital Libreville and Port-Gentil, the second largest city, to celebrate the end of Bongo's reign. They also chanted slogans against France. Opponents say the Bongo family has done almost nothing to share the state's oil and mining wealth with the people during its more than half a century in charge of Gabon.
A growing sense of general impatience, as in many African countries, among younger people, urban populations, feeling that it was time for a change, that traditional elites need to move on. And the people feeling that although they had the freedom of speech in Gabon, they couldn't actually choose their leaders.
This is while France, Gabon's former colonial ruler, has condemned the military coup in the African country. France has around 400 soldiers permanently deployed to Gabon for training and military support, including a base in the capital, Libreville, and has extensive economic relations with the African country in the mining and oil sectors. Gabon is the second former French colony in Africa to have faced a military coup in as many months, and the sixth in 3 years, following the coups in Mali, Chad, Guinea, Burkina Faso, and most recently Niger, whose new installed junta may yet meet with an intervention from the country's West African neighbors.
What's happening now is in several countries at the same time, sometimes even three neighboring countries, which is the case in Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger, where there's been a major pullback. And if it happens everywhere at the same time, that's very bad news for the French authorities, because there's this idea of what the authorities call contagion, or at least of examples, giving ideas to others, obviously. In the same way that in 2011, when people in the streets overthrew the dictatorships in Tunisia and Egypt, it gave ideas to neighboring countries. So the same thing could happen. But we'll have to wait and see.
In all of these cases, the former colonizer has been called to play a role of one kind or another, and the question of his influence in each country has been a major one. French mining company Eramet is Gabon's second largest private employer. It has announced that given the current unrest, it is suspending its operations. France had thousands of troops in Mali, where it led a nearly decade-long military operation to combat an insurgency. That operation ended in 2022, after the rise of a military junta there. Throughout the region, France is viewed as a colonial power, which many blame it for the widespread instability there.
Tensions between Niamey and Paris are running high as Niger's military leaders have given the French ambassadors 48 hours to leave the country. In a statement, Niger's foreign minister said the decision to expel the French ambassador was taken partly due to their refusal to respond to an invitation to a meeting with Niger's Minister of Foreign Affairs. The statement added that actions by the French government have been contrary to the interests of the African nation. This prompted a response from France. Paris dismissed the ultimatum, saying Niger's junta have no authority to ask its ambassador to leave. The ultimatum was widely supported by Niger's public. Hundreds of protesters gathered in front of the French military base in Niamey on Friday, calling for the departure of foreign troops.
It's all part of the general mobilization we have here. It's to demand the departure of these invading forces, this occupying force, the French force here at Niamey Air Base. That's why we want to come to the door of this base to ask them to leave our country from here. We don't need this occupying force. We don't want them on our land.
The latest development in Niger comes amid a series of anti-French demonstrations in the African country after the army overthrew President Mohamed Bazoum in July. The military leaders in Niamey accused former colonial power France of seeking to use force in order to reinstate the ousted president. They also said the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, is an organization in the pocket of France. This is because ECOWAS has imposed tough economic sanctions on Niger following the coup and has threatened the country with military intervention.
The region is employing other elements of its instruments and engaging with the military authorities. We are hopeful that these diplomatic efforts will yield the desired outcome and make it unnecessary for the deployment of the force. Nonetheless, preparations continue towards making the force ready for deployment.
The anger and resentment against ECOWAS and its threats to use military force against junta leaders in Niger comes as many across the Sahelian nation blame France for pushing the West African bloc to use military force in Niger. But the question, indeed, is that where is all that hatred against France coming from? Over the years, Niger has faced growing insecurity amid the worsening effects of political instability and armed insurgencies. At the same time, the West African nation, a resource-rich country of 26 million, is, according to UN figures, considered one of the poorest nations on Earth. Given that the French have been playing a crucial role in Niger, both politically and economically, the general public there points its finger at Paris to be the cause of all those grievances. But Niger is not the only country facing growing anti-French sentiment. The hatred against France has been a common feeling amongst many African countries, given that the military takeover in Niger is the sixth in the Sahel region in less than 3 years, coming after Burkina Faso, Guinea, and Mali. The toppling of President Bazoum has, in a way, created shockwaves not only across the sub-region, but reverberated across Europe and the United States. That's mainly due to the fact that Niger is home to strategic mineral reserves such as uranium, gold, and crude oil, among others. France holds mineral rights for the mining of uranium, which powers its nuclear power plant. This has made Paris highly depend on Niger's uranium mines. But being aware of the strategic importance of uranium to France's energy needs, Niger military leaders have already announced that they will suspend the export of uranium and gold to France and the US. The move is widely seen by many across Niger as a way to cut the hands of powers that have long been plundering the country's resources. Knowing that the same fate will be waiting for many across the Sahelian countries, African people are waking up to the fact that Western powers, namely France and the United States, have been maintaining their presence in their countries merely to plunder their resources. That's maybe the reason for Nigerians and other West African countries to come to the fact that the era of colonialism is over and they're the ones who should put an end to decades of West occupation and economic exploitation of their countries. The United States, and yet another example of racial discrimination. On Saturday, a white man, later identified as 21-year-old Ryan Christopher Perlmutter, went on a shooting rampage, killing three people in the U.S. city of Jacksonville, Florida. Authorities said all the three victims were black, calling the incident racially motivated.
Plainly put, this shooting was racially motivated, and he hated black people. He wanted to kill niggers. That's the one and only time I'll use that word.
The Jacksonville sheriff said the gunman had authored several manifestos for media, his parents, and law enforcement, detailing his hatred for black people. The sheriff said he also left a will and a suicide note that were retrieved by his father. Police also said the guns used in Jacksonville's shooting were obtained legally.
They were 100% legal, and as I stand here with you today, they were legally possessed. There was nothing indicating, again, like I said, it appears that the dealers that sold those guns to him did it legally. They did what they were supposed to have done.
The Saturday shooting in Jacksonville drew a slew of reactions.
This is a community that has suffered again and again. So many times, this is where we end up. And there were so many people out today, obviously grieving, upset. It's just something that should not and must not continue to happen in our community. It's too often the same folks. We must do everything that we can. We must do everything that we can to dissuade this type of hate.
In a statement, U.S. President Joe Biden said we must refuse to live in a country where black families going to the store or black students going to school live in fear of being gunned down because of the color of their skin. Attorney General Merrick Garland said the Justice Department is investigating the shooting as a hate crime, calling the incident an act of racially motivated violent extremism. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis called Jacksonville shooter's comeback.
Florida, the state, and its people condemn the horrific racially motivated murders perpetrated by a deranged scumbag in Jacksonville at the Dollar General store. Perpetrating violence of this kind is unacceptable, and targeting people due to their race has no place in the state of Florida.
The Jacksonville shooting coincides with a rally held in the U.S. Capitol, Washington, D.C., to mark the 60th anniversary of a march at which late prominent civil rights activist Martin Luther King Jr. gave a galvanizing speech about justice and equality. Thousands of people gathered at the Lincoln Memorial to advocate for racial equality. Speakers at the rally strongly condemned gun violence against black individuals as the crowd chanted Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter! Black Lives Matter! Black Lives Matter!
The protesters stress that racism is becoming more prevalent in the American society. They highlighted the need for more efforts to eliminate racial discrimination. The 1963 March was a pivotal event in the U.S. Civil Rights Movement at which Martin Luther King gave his I Have a Dream speech. The march brought more than 250,000 people to the nation's capital to push for an end to discrimination. Yet 60 years on, brutality against black people is happening at record numbers.
Because I'm very concerned about the direction our country is going in. And it is because instead of moving forward, it feels as if we're moving backward.
Just to make that evident, 21 African Americans were killed by U.S. law enforcement officers only in January this year. That already makes the year one of the deadliest ever so far for the African American community in the U.S. That includes the tragic death of Keenan Darden Anderson, who was tased by police officers in Los Angeles following a car accident. But that's only one incident of brutality and racial discrimination against blacks. The United States has a long history of such bias against the people of color. One major example was the brutal killing of 46-year-old black man named George Floyd, who died after a white police officer pressed on his neck for more than 9 minutes during an arrest in May 2020 in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The death of the handcuffed black man triggered months of mass protests, not only in cities across the U.S., but also other parts of the world. With many arguing that America was built on slavery, it is not erroneous to claim that racial profiling against African Americans and other people of color is deeply rooted in American culture. Maybe that's why it is early to think that putting an end to prejudice and racism in the U.S. does not seem to be happening anytime soon.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.